welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they're located up on 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them. They got a great inventory right now of tractors, mowers, implements, you name it. Go up and see them. They got some good financing going on. If you need something worked on, they got a great service department that can squeeze you in right now and get you fixed up and ready for summer. So give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
There you have it. All right. So let's get right to it. We have a lot of crime to discuss. And it was so fitting. On our way into the studio, there was a guy sitting on the curb talking to himself really, really loud. And
he was, had quite a conversation going.
He really did. He was going for it. That would have been right where we parked, but I got kind of blocked by a guy. I had to park across the street. It's like, oh, lucky.
Well, the sad part was he was having a great conversation with himself until somebody came up and interrupted and started arguing his point.
Well, so, and they were having a conversation with themselves. So there was another guy talking to himself in the window, screaming in this weird little voice about how he was trying to break in, but he wasn't. Like,
oh, yeah. There was a crowd.
It was like, yeah, it was like a whole team of people who were utterly alone, but all together.
And guess what is a common theme between those three?
I'm going to say drugs, but that's just my thought because I'm negative that way. So that was the voice of Officer Joe. And then Kathy is here, too. We have a full team.
Yep.
And Sheriff Mike Johnson is our guest this hour. He, unless I have miscalculated, he apparently has 29 years of continuous active experience in law enforcement. It could be 28, could be 29.
Could be 30.
Oh, I had to make a guess here. He worked through the ranks at the city and rural county agencies, served as the city of Anderson's police chief, where not one person ever had a complaint because, honestly, it was amazing, and took a town that really was struggling and cleaned it up mightily. He was there for 9 years before he became the 23rd Shasta County Sheriff Coroner. He holds all California Post certifications, bachelor's degree in wildlife management, which seems kind of fitting in light of the story we just told you. Wildlife management would be a requirement. And a master's degree in criminal justice, and he graduated from the FBI National Academy at Quantico. He is actively involved in the community service organizations, including Anderson Rotary, Youth Violence Prevention Council, Asphalt Cowboys, Save the Rodeo Grounds, by the way, Children's Legacy Center, and Community Corrections Partnerships.
And you know what?
And that's
Aaron,
just the stuff I could find.
He was overwhelmingly elected by the citizens of Shasta County in a constitutionally protected election.
Correct. And so we are lucky enough to have a great sheriff. We have a lot of great sheriffs in Northern California, despite what you might hear like on the media or whatever, that California is completely in the tank and everybody's an idiot or whatever. If you go to the far northern reaches, you should come this week. It's going to be 113.
Yeah.
if you're brave enough to show up.
Yeah, meet the real Redding.
Yeah. So Sheriff Johnson.
I'm here, man. That all sounds pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, who is this guy?
Can you live up to that? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no pressure.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a great day. I love the North State and everything that you guys are talking about and represent.
Well, we thought it was time to touch base with our law enforcement community because they're just, I don't know, it's interesting. You guys either get a really great rap or a really bad rap. It just depends. People are not ambivalent about law enforcement anymore. Used to be law enforcement was kind of like, you know, you came and you went, and if you weren't a bad guy, you didn't deal with them very much. And now people have some pretty strong opinions on both sides.
And unfortunately, it's usually one polar end of the spectrum either way. We've lost a lot of that middle ground common sense in this, not just this state, but this country lately. It's a little frustrating.
Yeah. I can only imagine. So,
and what would make you think that that guy was that was talking to himself would be on drugs, Aaron? My God.
I know that.
Well, considering nobody had a gun to his head and was making him do it, so there was that option. But it's funny because I've had this conversation this last week a few times because Wairika is, I don't know, they say that they're not talking about bringing in commercial cannabis, but I think they probably are. So anyway, there's a lot of discussion about this. And just yesterday, in the pool, actually, I had somebody say, oh, well, if so-and-so is having trouble with pain or whatever, they should try marijuana. And
I saw you light up on that. I thought, uh-oh.
I was like,
insert foot.
I felt like a lawnmower and somebody just pulled the rope. I was like, I'm coming. And it was like, did you know this? Did you know, all these things that we talk about all the time? No, they didn't know any of those things.
No.
They believed all the stuff that was out there that it just, takes the edge off and it's good to make you, if you have cancer, it'll help you eat and it's medicine. I looked at her, I go, when was the last time you smoked a medicine that your doctor told you to go smoke a medicine? Thanks, Officer Joe, for that. That's a powerful one. People go, oh, yeah, I guess you don't smoke medicine.
It destroys your lungs first and foremost, and not to mention all the other problems with marijuana.
But yeah, we talked about, the school shooters and all that stuff, and she's like, I had no idea. I said, isn't it interesting that that's all being kept from the public?
Yep, typical media. They're not our friends.
Well, the psychosis and all the mental health. Because so if you think about it, I ask people all the time who are not sure if marijuana is dangerous, and I always ask them, because they're 70 years old. Older people who would have known, back in the day when THC was 2%. And I said, did you ever have kids in your high school who smoked pot, who were considered the stoner kids, who... whether they graduated or not, next time you saw them when they were 19 or 20, they were just sitting on the lawn in front of CVS, high with a bunch of friends. It's that just never happened.
Times have changed, Aaron, and that the marijuana, the grade and the potency and stuff now is off the charts, and it's just not, it wasn't good then, and it's exponentially bad now.
Yeah, it wasn't good then, but it didn't become honestly, I think if all of us took there's five of us on here who have opinion. Okay, what would be the percentage of kids in that you went to school with who grew up and just stayed being stoners for the rest of their lives, never did anything productive?
Probably less than 1%. Yeah, it was only a couple kids that even when I went to my last class reunion, I was just like, God, grow up.
Yeah. Another big difference is back in the day, if you got caught with pot.
Oh, yeah. You
were in some deep doo-doo, yeah. And there were consequences,
yeah.
And you paid the price.
Yeah.
Now there's none of that.
No.
And it's just free flow.
What do you see from the law enforcement side on the lack of consequences?
Yeah, well, for marijuana, there's very little, and unless we're talking about, major illegal grow operations or transportation and sales. Not even transportation's kind of gone out the window, but we have to make a good sales case or a good cultivation case and stack a bunch of other charges on there just to get some accountability held with that. It's out the window. With the days of making a traffic stop and finding a bag of weed on somebody and towing their car and taking them to jail and them having to appear in court and losing their license and all that stuff, those days are gone. That just doesn't happen anymore. It's super frustrating to the officers on the street because, you hear that constant argument about, they're just harmless pot smokers. Well, okay, sometimes that's true, but that's certainly not the standard or the norm. You typically, you've heard, and you don't hear this too much anymore, but it is a gateway drug, and it does lead to so many other problems, and that's the frustrating part. So when we want to intervene and we want to get that hook to turn people's lives or to hold them accountable and what they're doing in our communities, it's just not supported through law anymore.
And Sheriff Johnson, we know you, You walk softly, but you carry a big stick. And we know that your marijuana team has had some great successes, that you have made promises to us as a community, and you have kept your promises. I think you're probably the only politician in this community that has kept your promise as far as what you said during your campaign, going after the marijuana grows and the illegal, all the illegal activity that went on with it. And so I'm interested, sir, because you don't tell the story, and I know that there's been some recent operations that you've been involved with in the Lac Creek area, and yeah. I know that the citizens up there were held hostage pretty much for the last 20 years. They had illegal growers showing up, doing trespass grows, running around with guns, threatening people, midnight traffic at all hours from out of the county. And you decided that your team and you were going to go up there and handle that. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll give you some statistics year by year after we cover this topic of Lac Creek. But thank you for that, Officer Joe. I do appreciate the kind words you say with that about honesty. And I try not to make any promises that I can't keep. And if there's something that interferes with the promise I've made and I can't reach that goal, I'm the first one to step up and tell them I'm not able to achieve it, and here's why. But the marijuana one especially, I'm especially proud of, because we are really making some headway in this county with the marijuana eradication. Lac Creek was one of those areas, those subdivisions that basically had just been overrun by growers, and the poor people, the poor good citizens that were left, behind in that subdivision and had to deal with this and deal with the intimidation, the constant traffic, the illegal grows, the water diversion, and the decimation to their area as far as ecologically goes, is just unfortunate. And we took it back, and this is what we're doing. I've tried to tell the public before that this is our mission. We plan to start taking back our county a little section at a time, and once we take that ground, we don't want to give it back. And Lac Creek is a perfect example where we went in and we started with three or four partial search warrants and eradicated that. Then we went on to the next several, and then we just finished up with our final sweep of seven partial search warrants, where we have wiped out that entire area of marijuana grows, and now the good citizens and the residents in that area have taken it back, and we're not going to give it back to the growers.
Sheriff, I understand that your team has taken down the largest honey oil operation in Shasta County's history up there, and that was a commercial operation run out of a couple of cargo containers, and all the illegal grows, which were predominantly Mexican cartel grows, were feeding into that. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. Big BHO, butane honey oil operation. As was part of that, and we didn't even know that that was there actually when we were doing those search warrants. It was part of the search warrant related to marijuana eradication that was going on, and we came upon that in our search warrants. So yes, it's a huge operation, and it's very true, Officer Joe. All the surrounding cartel grows were contributing to that BHO operation, as well as some others from out of the area that are connected as well. And got several illegal firearms and other hard drugs, fentanyl and some methamphetamine, all associated with that, and turned out being a major case for us, a real feather in the marijuana unit's cap.
Can you tell us how many arrests were made in those sweeps?
Well, there are physical arrests, just a couple. There's several more complaints that, as our terminology is, that we put forward the case, request charges, and it goes to the DA. So there'll be more arrests, we hope. And more prosecutions to come out of it after they review the case and put the cases together and issue the warrants.
So for people, before we kind of gloss it over, because we all know what butane honey oil is, for people who don't know what that is and how dangerous that is, because it isn't just, you know, they were, you know, people think, well, you know, they're growing marijuana, it's not hurting anybody. Butane honey oil is a whole nother deal. You might want to give folks a little police shorthand for that.
To simplify it, it's the extraction of the THC, which we know is the concentrated chemical in marijuana and cannabis that gets you high. So the process of butane honey oil is basically they're extracting that in its rawest form and its most concentrated form. And it comes out in a, when they say butane honey oil, that's kind of what it's like, a honey oil. It can even be kind of a jelly substance that is just super potent. It causes a lot of hospitalizations, deaths, it's a hallucinogenic if you take it in large amounts. And the process to get to a butane honey oil is a actual lab, kind of like they used to have methamphetamine labs, bubbling labs back in the day, the same type of concept. It is a process through various tubes and gases and extraction where they're running this through. It's super dangerous. We have a lot of these butane honey oil labs blow up and kill innocent folks and start fires and everything else. So it's not just a simple little mom and pop or a guy growing a few plants in his backyard and decides to make some honey oil. It is a full-on lab that is highly dangerous, highly toxic, and produces a chemical which is equal to a fentanyl or a heroin.
And that's what they use a lot in edibles and different things like that. I mean, people are actually putting this stuff in their mouth unwittingly.
They use it for a lot of different things. You're right, Aaron. The edibles is a big one, but they also use it, like when people are smoking bowls of marijuana or bongs, they'll put honey oil on top of the marijuana that they're smoking to intensify that high as well.
But you have just people who think, well, you know, my friend told me if I take these edibles, it'll help me sleep. I might have heard that in the pool yesterday. And I'm like, do you have any idea what's in that? And they're like, well, no, it comes from a store and it's all regulated.
Yeah.
and that is the biggest farce there is out there. It is not regulated. That's why people end up in the hospital, because there's different levels and concentrates of that. And, I'm not going to say that not every one of them are regulated. There's probably a few companies out there who attempt to regulate it.
I think just fell off her stool, I think.
By far, you're taking a big gamble when you have those edibles or those gummy bears or whatever else they make with it.
Well, and this is when we talk about the honey oil, this is what the kids are saying. They're dabbing. That's what they're doing, is they're taking a pin drop of this 100% THC and vaping it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and with all those fun chemicals in it, how could that go wrong?
That creates a whole other problem. Those that vaping, it's, you know, you could be in large crowds, like you're in Vegas or Disneyland or something, you'll smell and you can't determine where it's coming from.
Right. Well, and you guys used to be able to, like when you pulled people over, you would know if they were using drugs in the car, but it'd be pretty hard now. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, maybe let's hit a little bit of that. And I'm sure we'll never run out of information. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Dangerous, I prowl the streets at night. I howl when I get your scent. I turn on my flashing light. I sit in the shadow. Police call. I'm a police.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Driving while high is no different than shooting a gun with no consciousness where the bullet might land. A car is simply a 4,000-pound bullet. We dedicate our efforts in educating the public about the dangers of marijuana to California Highway Patrol Officer Andy Camilleri. Andy was working an accident scene on Christmas Eve and was plowed into and killed by a 22-year-old driver high on marijuana and alcohol, a frequent and deadly combination. Andy left behind his wife and three children. There is only a lifetime of pain for them. Remember, let's be careful out there.
Well, hey, hey, Mr. Policeman. Bet I can drive faster than you can. Come on, hoss, let's have some fun. Go on, shoot me with a radar gun. You look bored and I sure am. Catch me if you can. Hey, hey, Mr. Policeman. I got a 75 fiber Trans Am. With a 455 up under the hood, me and my brother got a running good. Wake up behind them old Ray-Bans, catch me if you can. Go on, turn on your blue lights. So pretty.
So pretty.
You guys killed me.
I have no part in that.
I did.
Hey, Sheriff Johnson, I got a question. The other day I was in the parking lot outside of CVS and I was watching a parade of people walking up to a big planter box, and they had a little, I don't know, I guess it was like a self-serve station where they would come up and put some stuff in a little pipe and smoke and then walk away, and then somebody else would come up and put a little something in some pipe and smoke. And what are you supposed to do when you see something like that? Just shake your head? And or
if you work for CVS, you're not supposed to say anything. I think that's where they all get fired.
Yeah.
If you work for a corporation, you can't say anything, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I looked at that, and it's, I mean, it's
call.
Everywhere.
I would say call. I we're not okay with that. It's you know, you have to call the of course, the jurisdictional responsibility for that, but
right.
I would not hesitate to call and articulate what you're seeing.
Right.
And hopefully we're going to go, one of our agencies is going to go and deal with it. I know that I certainly would, and I certainly do. Even when I'm not on duty, I will call and have Reading PD, APD, or us go and investigate it, break it up, make arrests, whatever we can do out of it. But it's not okay. That's part of what's going on, and people are just becoming numb to that. I mean, we'll go back to the front of the show there, Aaron, where you're talking about seeing the guy sitting on the curb talking to himself. And, you know, once upon a time, we used to go up to that guy and balance him out. And if you can determine he's under the influence of drugs, away to jail, he'd go. And, yes, sometimes they don't keep him, and sometimes they don't prosecute them, but you know what? You take them off the street, people don't have to deal with them. You disrupt their lives, and either we get them a chance to change their life or start being accountable for their actions.
Well, you look at some of our, you know, I always think, you know, what if there's some older person walking down the sidewalk? I mean, it's, for heaven's sakes, it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not like we're doing this show at midnight. You know, somebody walking along, coming from a local restaurant or something like that, and these guys hopping around, like physically hopping around, waving their arms and all jacked up, knock these people down. I mean, it's dangerous.
I can tell you this. The philosophy that I have taken to every agency I've been with, or been at least led and been a chief or sheriff of now, is this, is that our job as law enforcement is to, you know, protect the life and property and constitutional rights of every person out there. And to do that, we have to do our job. The cops cannot get frustrated with whether they're prosecuted or whether they're held in jail. And I run the jail now, so that's even near and dear to me, but it doesn't matter. If you're the cop on the street, your job is to make the arrest, write the report, book them into jail, and then on to the next one. And I don't want our officers, our deputies, I'll speak just for my agency, I don't want our deputies being complacent or afraid to be proactive and aggressive just because we have a liberal
California media that tries to paint us in a different light. Their job is to be hunters. We go out there and proactively find the criminals in our community and arrest them and hold them accountable. And that's what I want to continue to do.
Well, the only way
we're going to take back our county.
Absolutely. There are a lot more of us than there are of you. And what I see in the public is people go, oh, well, nothing will happen anyway.
Attitude.
And kind of giving up. I mean, it's not that they don't care. It's just that they don't think it's a thing.
And that's what I tell people. If you don't report it, it doesn't exist. And it doesn't matter what the offense is, report it. So, in this case,
I mean, he's sitting on a sidewalk, waving his arms and talking to himself. Is he breaking any laws?
No.
Are the police able to even do anything? I mean, I could see where you could come up and at least interview them and see if they're in the right mind. But
there's a whole new team here in the city of Reading called the Community Intervention Response Team. That's who you need to call because they are out there 24/7, 7 days a week, and they are addressing the issue of these type of citizens.
So if a person was to call 911 and say, hey, there's a crazy person on the sidewalk.
Do you call 911? Is that appropriate?
I don't know. Is that a 911 thing? I think they have their own phone number.
Who knows that?
That's a non-emergency call.
Yeah, that's a non-emergency call.
It goes to the same center. It goes to the
house. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
And you have to, and I would tell anybody that's listening out there, if you report something, please try to be a little bit articulate of what you're reporting. You know, they're going to ask you several questions. Was it a white male? Is it, what's he wearing? What's he doing? I mean, articulate that. Well, he's not just sitting there talking to himself. He's intimidating people. He is making people uncomfortable, or he is obstructing traffic, or whatever the circumstance is. But you need to articulate that because that will determine the level of response that comes to that
problem.
That's a good point. Okay, that's a good point.
Mike, let's talk about constraints that you're placed under. And a lot of people don't understand that law enforcement today has so many legal constraints. Like in the case of marijuana, you can grow 7,000 marijuana plants. It's still a $500 ticket. And because of that, you're not going to send your deputies through the woods, getting them injured to chase two growers who are going to get a $500.
They're going to get a misdemeanor.
And the most important thing you can do is eliminate the marijuana. But you have many further constraints that people don't understand, especially as the chief law enforcement officer in our custody facilities. You're under federal mandates. You're under state mandates. Who you can keep in jail, and people wonder why is somebody getting arrested and they're not even getting booked, or they're getting a ticket, or they're committing a felony and they're not going to jail. Could you explain some of those constraints that you're under?
Yeah, the legislator, and the worst one is ours, California, and Governor Newsom and Bonta are just arch enemies of mine. They keep adding restraints on us that dictates how we operate. And an example of that is, you know, somebody comes into the jail, we have to go through a classification process on how we're going to house them. And they're making so many requirements for that now that the jail can't accommodate everybody that comes in because they're, you know, one thing or another. They're LGBTQ and they claim or identify with this, but now they have to be segregated from this population. They have a religious affiliation or belief one way or another. Now they have to be separated from a different population, too. And it makes it very trying for us, not to mention the list of medical issues and questions that we go through to see if they can even come in the facility. And then we are responsible for treatment of them while they're in the facility.
Oh, my gosh.
It just keeps stacking against us. And the newest thing, which is really going to be a hurdle for us, is the mental health aspect. So we only have two operating mental health facilities in the state left. One's in Napa, one's in, I think it's Atwater or someplace in that area. And we send people that are found incompetent to stand trial. We call them ISTs. So if there's somebody that gets arrested, and let's say it's for a felony, and they're in our jail and they go to their arraignment, and the court determines them incompetent to stand trial. So now we have two avenues. We try to restore them to competency so they can participate in their own defense. And we have a program in the jail where we do that, which is another segregated unit, which takes away a lot of beds and a specialty setup for these people. But at some point, if we're unable to restore them to competency through medication and counseling and other treatment programs, then we have to send them off to this, one of these state hospitals. And they're there for quite a while, whatever time is necessary, until they're eventually sent back to our jail, and we have to hold them in jail where their trial goes. Now, here's the problem that's come up with the state, or that the state's created for us, is they've, in their infinite wisdom, they've determined that each county, based on a matrix of a bunch of things, is allowed X amount of people to send to the state hospital every year. If you go over that amount, then they start fining you up to $100,000 or more per person that you send over that amount. So for Shasta County, it's 43, and I will easily go over 43 if we have to keep sending people at the rate that we're doing. And then they will be fining us, which comes out of my budget. So they say the solve is at the end of the year we'll be able to petition the state and get that money back. But if they give it back, then we have to create more mental health programs with that money. So which means that money would not come back to me.
So you don't really get it back.
Yeah.
HHSA.
Yep. And, psych.
There's just a loss for us. And I don't know how they expect us to keep operating. When I say us, this is all the sheriffs.
Yeah.
All 15 sheriffs across the state are in the same boat as I am.
And we're not even talking about the youth. So that's a whole other issue. There is no treatment facilities for youth who are suffering from mental illness.
Really?
And so now what you have is the dynamics of the jail have changed drastically, not just with mental health and drug addiction and everything else, but the population since COVID and since the AB 109 and Prop 47 and 57 and all those, the release of all these prisoners and decriminalization, we have mini prisons now. We don't have county jail. It's mini prison. And I've got the worst of the worst in there, and it is a horrible environment to work in. And the pay is not great for these folks that are having to do it. So I'm having staffing issues, which is why I had to close down a level of the jail temporarily. And folks, I'm here to tell you, there's nothing more I want than to reopen that level of the jail and start locking more people back up.
Mike, national statistics show that correctional officers live much shorter lives just because they're inside that concrete block 24 hours a day for their entire career. I know that Shasta County, of course, we have staffing issues. Perhaps you could touch on that. I think that many times politicians are very insensitive, not understanding that, you know, we have cities within this county, but we have another city, and it's called the City of the Jail. And you're running an entire city in there. You're responsible for 100% of what goes on inside there and all of those people. And the money drain is just incredible. And I don't think our politicians understand.
Well, I don't know that our – it's funny because people should – like the citizenry should understand, because anybody who's tried to hire anybody in the last few years – it's so weird. I just read an article yesterday that a gal went and applied – this was in another state, but she went and applied for a job at the sheriff's department, which I thought was fitting that we were talking to you today. She goes to apply at 9 in the morning for a job at the sheriff's department, shows up for her interview.
Drunk.
And yeah. And the guy that was interviewing is like, have you been drinking? She's like, well, yeah. Did you drive here? Yeah. So she winds up on a DUI going to jail instead of working at it. I was like, oh my God.
Yes,
I saw that.
Definitely what we're dealing with.
And
I'll give you an idea about that staffing problem just in the jail. So since I've been your sheriff, and that's a little under 2 years, we have hired 45 people in the jail to work in the jail, and we have lost 48. So
oops.
I'm at a -3 from when I first started.
How many are there? Like, if you were fully staffed and, like, all the floors were open and, you know, in a perfect world, how many people does it take to run that jail?
75. And that's kind of 75 really minimum staff. And it's realistically, I should have about 90. But 75, I could run that whole jail and have that other level open.
And now you have...
Well, when I say 75, that's correctional deputies and support staff, so and cooks and the janitorial, medical, all of that. I am down, I think, about 17 correctional deputies right now.
Wow.
That's just correctional deputies, so there's about 57 of those.
And the reason you can't fill those is because you're not getting qualified applicants or nobody's applying?
A little of both, but more than a recruitment problem, it's been a retention problem. Recruitment was a problem initially, but we have put a lot of effort into recruitment, and we were getting them through the door at least. Once they go there, they find out that, and we even have them do sit-alongs and everything before they're hired, but once they actually get to work in there, they, for one reason or another, but it's usually because the environment is what it is, like we just talked about, being locked up with the worst of the worst. And they're working shift work, required to work mandatory overtime because of the staffing shortages, and they can go and work and be a tree trimmer or retail or a window washer or something, you know, Monday through Friday, 5 days a week with weekends off and holidays off, and get the same pay.
Wow.
Well, that's an easy decision. We have to.
It's a tough decision, especially when you're talking about people with young families.
Of course.
You know, they're not being able to go to their kids' baseball games or their school plays or this and that. And if they can make the same pay and get to do all that, they're going to go that way every time.
Yeah. I've found out with the prison up at Hurlong, you can make twice as much being the manager of Panda Express than it is to be a correctional officer in a federal prison.
And that's what it comes down to, Aaron.
Yep.
The correctional officer is a job, not a career.
Nobody's going to maybe kill you at Panda Express, I don't know, anymore. That's kind of a toss-up, too. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with Sheriff Mike Johnson. He is our guest today for this hour, and we're coming up with Phil Kirpin at the 1 o'clock time frame. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
He bleeds blue. Does his job anyway. After trying to make a difference, protecting me and you, tuning out for ridicule. 'Cause he bleeds blue.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Did you know the non-native noxious weed we call marijuana is a thirsty plant? It uses up to 5 gallons of water a day in our climate. Most marijuana in California is chemically laden with pesticides, herbicides, miticides, growth hormones, and even adhesives like methacrylate used to boost pollen capture. Methacrylate? What the heck? Superglue? All this goes into the human body from unknowing users looking to get high. I call them the walking as yet undead. Remember, let's be safe out there.
It doesn't weigh a lot until you put it on, and the weight of it is staggering. When duty calls each time, he knows he's got to answer, and it's all in the hand. Badge. And he ain't gonna buckle under the weight of the badge.
No, he... All right, so we have a slight time crunch. We've got about 12 minutes left. Apparently the clock in the studio was incorrect, so I was lollygagging.
So, Sheriff, one of the things I want to talk to you about is water. And as you're aware, we have 5 ordinances in our county. And for the public, that's we have no hemp, We have no dispensaries. We have no outdoor growing. We have no marijuana advertising. And then finally, we have no water wasting. And this is the ordinance that, once applied, will permanently stop the marijuana and then will not make it so that you don't have to go back over and over. And we're going to be working this week to ask that the county come together and that your partners support you. But I think it's important for the people to know that when we apply the water ordinance, that's not the sheriff's job. It is the job of environmental health and code enforcement. And code enforcement has been doing a better job, and they have been out. As a matter of fact, in the Lack Creek area, we follow the Facebook up there, Sheriff, and the growers who had their power taken away, they're already trying to figure out how to circumvent that. So there's a lot of generators running up there right now because of your actions, and hopefully that will help eliminate some of these trespass grows. So let's talk about the water. What can we do, Sheriff?
Well, man, God bless you for helping push on that one, because I want that ordinance to start being enforced, especially when it comes to these wells that are being used to irrigate the marijuana grows. I want to go in and destroy those wells under a destruction warrant if they're being used for that purpose. It certainly have the ordinance to support it. We just haven't had the conviction on pushing forward and making that happen, and I would really like to get it. It is a big deal. The water is a big deal, and the other one is diversion of creeks and rivers and waterways that they use to irrigate the marijuana. There's also plenty of laws in place for that. And I got to tell you, as far as those go, when you talk about our partners, our number one partner in marijuana eradication in the county of Shasta is Fish and Wildlife Service. They are outstanding partners. A lot of times they'll lead the marijuana grow operations, and then other times we'll lead it, and we both help each other. The difference is the state of Fish and Wildlife does not destroy the infrastructure when they go in and eradicate a marijuana grow, where we do. We tear out the lines. We tear out the water sources. We do everything we can. Now, we're not damming up those wells or destroying those wells, which I want to get to, and we're not pushing forward on prosecution for environmental crimes, which I'd like to, too. And I want to take some of that out of the state's hands and put it in ours and push forward, like you said, through code enforcement, environmental health, and start holding these people accountable and finding them, if nothing else, the landowner, and some accountability.
Mm-hmm. $10,000 a day, Sheriff, and marijuana should pay for itself. The citizens of Shasta County should not have to pay for eradication. And this is a multi-year battle that you're in. I know that you've gone out 3 years in your plan, and that's healthy, but it's going to be a multi-year battle. And what I tell people, too, is even if they make marijuana legal, we're still going to have to address all the illegal growing that occurs.
Yeah. All these cartel grows.
Yeah, they're not going away.
$10,000 a day, Officer Joe. We actually have a case that we put together based on that, and it still hasn't been prosecuted or moved forward, that we want to go. So just so everybody understands, here how it works. If you're illegally growing marijuana, you can be fined $10,000 a day. So when we do flyovers, and let's say we fly over on October 1st and we identify a grow, and 14 days later we come with a search warrant and we eradicate that grow, well, there's proof that marijuana has been growing on that property for 14 days.
Uh-huh.
For $10,000 a day, we should be able to file the civil suit on that. And that's what we want to do, because we want this to be a self-sustaining operation, and where it's not taken away from the budget. It's not at the taxpayers' expense. It's at the growers or the property
owners. What's keeping that from happening now? What's the holdup at this point?
It's not the sheriff's department. Let me just put it that way.
Well, honestly, we need to get an administrative law judge, hire him. But it could be paid for out of the monies that would be taken in, and we can go after the landowners. And I appreciate when I hear you say going after the out-of-town landowners, because we know the games that they're playing. I didn't know that they were growing on my property, and we need to hold those people accountable.
There'll be common sense with that. If there is actually a grow going on, a property owner and he doesn't know about it, you know, okay, well, we'll give you the first time fair warning, and but if it comes up again, you know, you're not going to be able to claim ignorance.
Well, there's a bunch of them that accidentally own property in multiple counties in multiple grow locations. Yeah. I mean, who's that unlucky?
Right. I'd like to give you real quick, I know we're running out of time.
No, it's all right.
I'd like to give you the stats for the 3 years that we've been in this operation, not even really 2 years we've done this. So we started, our first operation wasn't until September of 2021 when I was appointed in August of 2021 and we took off with the marijuana. And so for those 3.5 months really that we did it in 2021, we took 19,000, these are rough numbers, 19,000 plants, about 5,000 pounds of process, 19 guns, made six arrests, and seized about $55,000. In 2022, a full year of work, 83,000 plants, 17,000 pounds of processed marijuana, meth, 65 guns, 42 arrests, and some more cash. And then year to date for 2023, we have 22,000 plants, 3,600 pounds of process. We've got 40 guns and 16 arrests and two BHO labs. So we are making a huge dent, and we are very productive. I'm so proud of the marijuana eradication team. I can't even tell you, their team has come together. They're hard workers. We support them administratively, and they just go and do their job. And now with the Shasta Interagency Narcotics Task Force, CINTIF, we had RPD and APD pull out of that. So that's kind of being reshaped, and we're using that to help support the marijuana eradication team also.
Mike, nice. I know that there is very bright news in your life. If you can share with us, I don't want to get too personal, but could you tell us about, there's a certain person in your life that has decided to create a tradition in your family. Could you tell us what that is?
Young Dylan Johnson, my youngest son, has just completed his first week on the streets with Reading Police Department.
Oh, my God.
Dylan went in the Marine Corps, served 4 years in the Marine Corps, came out, went to lineman school, became a lineman, was making twice what I'm making right now as a lineman, didn't like it, didn't like the culture of the people he was working with, quit that job, and went into law enforcement, which I didn't think he was going to do. And I was going to hire him. We don't have a nepotism clause at the sheriff's office, but lo and behold, he told me, yeah, Dad, if I go to work for you, everybody will say I just got a job because of you, so I'm going to do it on my own. And he got hired by Reading, and they sponsored him through, and he had his first week on the streets. I'd love to tell you a great story that happened this week.
Sure. Yeah, we've got like four minutes.
He's on the field training program, so he has a trainer with him, an officer. He arrested my son arrested a female, much like the guy you saw sitting talking to himself.
Uh-huh.
Same type of circumstances. She had dope on her, and she was under the influence, so he books her into my jail. And as he's booking her in, he's down there. There's several other officers from other agencies and stuff, and this gal is just going off. And she ends up telling him, the training officer, she says, RPD sucks. I hate you guys. All you do is harass us. And now I heard you hired the sheriff's son to come harass us, too. I can't see him out here. But she didn't know he was the one that arrested her.
From her lips to God's ears.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty
very
funny.
Proud of him. Very proud that he's gone into law enforcement. He's going to make a good officer and have a good career, too.
And we're pulling for him, Mike. We consider him our native son, and there's many people in the community that are going to watch out for your
this
son.
This is kind of like how the Chinese play chess. You know, if we can't find officers, we're going to make them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very long game, but...
I am super proud of him. I'm very proud that also that, you know, he made that decision to go out and make his own name and not try to ride coattails or even have that perception, not that he would, but...
It's called adulting.
God bless the Marine Corps. They straightened that kid out like nobody's business.
Well, the good news is he got the kind of training that he's going to need to, you know, to at least be safe. He's...
Yeah, you know what, Aaron? Yeah. I missed the street so much. It was so fun being an officer and being on the street, so now I get to live through my son, I guess.
There you go. Yeah, because you're caught in paperwork hell, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
99% of the time. Do the North State sheriffs and do the sheriff's organizations still meet on a pretty regular basis?
North State sheriffs, there's about 10 of us, I think, that every once a week we have a Zoom meeting. So we keep in touch with each other, apprised of what's going on in our region and North State, and share resources. And then the California State sheriffs, we meet quarterly. All 58 sheriffs come together and try to figure out how we're going to overcome Newsom and Bonta on a regular basis.
Yeah, because that is the name of the game. How to overcome the bad choices? Because I just thing popped up on my feed here. We had a law recently passed, AB 1706, where 11 million arrest and conviction records have been wiped clean for the first 6 months of the implementation of the new law. They're expunging all the dope stuff.
Oops, hang on, I dropped my piece there.
So now you can hire people and then find out later that they were arrested for drugs. How exciting.
Newsom has refused to come to any of the state sheriff's meetings. He used to. It's traditionally the governor comes to the annual once a year and meets with the sheriffs and gets input. So far, Newsom has refused to come meet with us. Bonta's only come once, and I had a chance to bend his ear, which I probably shouldn't have pushed so hard. But and he made a fatal mistake. He decided not to come to the meeting. He decided to come to cocktail hour after.
Wow, good times.
Yeah, so he didn't.
We will have to have you tell us the details of that next time. What a cliffhanger! I like it. All right, Sheriff Mike Johnson, thank you for being on with us. You're listening to We the People.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate what you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Share this interview. You can find it commercial free at wethepeopleradio.us later this afternoon.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Is your marijuana killing you? The testing of 1,000 NorCal dispensary samples found the majority had toxic mold or substances harmful to humans. As a bud tender, recommended THC products for treatment of medical conditions while you get sicker or exacerbate mental health issues. Get professional medical help and sue the dispensaries for the product and advice liability. Marijuana is not medicine for most Americans, and there's no medicine that is smoked. Remember, let's be careful out there.
My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, Aaron. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they've got everything you want in John Deere. Go up and see them. If it's green, if they don't have it, they can get it for you. They also have a great service department, a parts department. They can fix you up if you're broke down or need repairs. Go up and talk to them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or get them on the interweb at...
pull Bill's tongue out during the break. Don't worry.
PapeMachinery.com.
So when you said that when it's green, all I could think of was when you're sitting at a red light and somebody doesn't go, Bill starts yelling, if it gets any greener, you'll have to mow it.
Well, I mean,
that's a good one.
It is a good one. I think it's a tractor problem, but anyway.
And I have to, every time I on the show and I hear about Pape, it's like stuck in my brain. We were over on the coast camping.
They're everywhere.
And they're everywhere.
Yeah. They colonized. I know.
Yeah.
I know. The rumors are just getting started.
They're in full colonization mode.
So our guest this hour, we're switching gears. We're switching from the sheriff to AARP, et cetera, et cetera, and the evils of. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. He is a leading free market policy analyst and advocate in Washington, D.C. He was the principal policy and legislative strategist at Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years. Previously worked at the Free Enterprise Fund, Club for Growth, and the Cato Institute. He's also a nationally syndicated columnist, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, and author of the 2011 book, Democracy Denied. Phil Kirpin is the president of American Commitment, dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom. They engage in critical public policy fights over the size and intrusiveness of government through direct advocacy, strategic policy analysis, and grassroots mobilization. Working with key partners, American Commitment delivers timely, effective public policy research to the broader free market movement. We're dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom.
What's not to like?
I know. I'm there like, who would not like this? Mr. Kirpin, thanks for coming back on with us. I think the last time we saw you was in April, and we've got a couple previous shows like from 2020 and 2022 posted on the website for you. Always interesting topics that sometimes fly under the radar a wee bit.
Hey, my pleasure. And yeah, good record keeping. I don't know exactly when I was on, but I'm going to check the website and find those old ones.
I'm going to lie and you're going to swear to it or something like that. We're going to do that. But I thought this was interesting. The article, and I've posted all this on the page for today. I should tell people today is July 9th, 2023, in case we replay this. Comprehensive survey of voters 55 and over, and I just want you to know, our friend Kathy Grindstaff is here. She's 55 and older, and Bill and I are definitely 55 and over.
Well,
so
55.
Yeah, well, Bill's. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. 55 plus on key health care concerns, Inflation Reduction Act, the act we all learned to hate right away, and AARP's advocacy activities. So,
let me tell you why we did this poll and, you know, kind of what this project is all about. We've been losing a lot of health care policy debates. We, meaning conservatives, we've been losing a lot of health care policy debates for a long time. And, of course, you know, the most famous one, of course, was Obamacare. And I think we all remember the destructive role that AARP played in that when they endorsed the bill and claimed that seniors were for it, even though raiding Medicare was kind of one of the main funding mechanisms. And, of course, you know, Democrats ended up paying a big price for that politically, but we're still living with it as a country. The thing was never repealed despite all of the promises from Republicans. And last year we got sort of a kind of a smaller scale replay of that in that the absurdly misnamed Inflation Reduction Act again, used Medicare as a piggy bank, as a source of funding for other unrelated spending. This time they cut Medicare prescription drug spending through government price controls, and they took the money out of Medicare to give it to, you know, green energy companies and wind and solar and electric vehicles and, you know, all of the other stuff that was stuffed into that bill. And once again, out leading the charge, saying this is what seniors wanted, was AARP. And, you know, we've been fighting back on them for a number of years now and talking about the conflict of interest they have with making most of their money from their partnership with United Health and the fact that they actually have a conflict of interest because they benefit from higher premiums because they skim 5% off the top of all the premiums of all the United Health plans that are AARP branded. And so they actually make more money when seniors are paying higher premiums. And, you know, we've been kind of making all these arguments. The reason we wanted to do a poll was we wanted to know if we were winning, if we were convincing the public, if you know, we actually had made inroads in terms of public opinion and understanding of, you know, Inflation Reduction Act and the conflict of interest issues and so forth. And I have to tell you, I was pretty happy about these survey results. Seniors are a lot smarter, I think, than the media and the Democrats give them credit for. And they don't think Inflation Reduction Act is going to reduce what they pay for drugs. They do think it's going to mean there are fewer new drugs and treatments available to them. And they are extremely concerned about the various conflict of interest issues with AARP and United Health. And so we got all these numbers. We've been talking about them. We've been pushing them around. We've been trying to give them to Republicans and telling them to use them because I didn't hear any of these arguments made on the campaign trail last year. Republicans did their usual thing. Health care comes up and they try to change the subject or go running. They just assume that, health care, Medicare, those are Democrat things. We'll talk about something else. And they missed a huge opportunity. They missed a huge opportunity to say, what such and such Democrat voted for amounted to siphoning hundreds of billions of dollars out of Medicare to give away to the green energy companies. And, AARP only cheered for it because they're in the pocket of the biggest health insurance company in the country, and they make money from it. I think that if we could get some candidates to lean into it, this is actually a big winning issue. So that's the main takeaway, and I'm happy to go through any of the specific numbers or anything you wanted to get into from the poll.
Well, they always, when anybody says anything about how Obamacare is not working and how these things, it's other things that are messing up Medicare. What's the tidy way for just regular people who aren't policy analysts to kind of fight back on that or to be knowledgeable? Or sound knowledgeable? Give us a cheat sheet.
Well, I don't know if there's a short answer to that question.
Well, that's okay. You can give us the long answer because this will be on tape. We can listen to it again.
Right.
We're old, but we can remember stuff.
Well, we've got a really major problem. We've got a major problem in the financing of Medicare because we've got a population that's getting older and we've got fewer working people to support it. And that's why we're dealing with a sort of a trust fund insolvency issue. At the same time, we've got provider costs that are rising pretty significantly, especially in my view because there's been so much consolidation in the hospital and the doctors and the other providers. You've now just got these large health systems in a lot of places. They don't have much competition, and they're able to demand higher and higher prices. And we've got sort of a lack of choices in competition that drives up prices. So we've got a situation where we've got fewer and fewer working people paying into a system where costs are continuing to rise pretty sharply. And so that's kind of the fundamental fiscal problem. And what the politicians said, their take on it, which what they did in this Inflation Reduction Act was, well, the way we're going to save money is we're going to dramatically reduce what Medicare spends on prescription drugs. And, there are basically two problems with that. One is that, if you spend a lot less on prescription drugs, you're going to get fewer new prescription drugs, fewer new cures and treatments. And, as a consequence of that, you're probably going to have more hospitalizations and long-term care, which is actually more expensive than if you had, say, a breakthrough cancer drug or Alzheimer's drug. And so undermining the incentive for new cures can ultimately be even more costly than getting those incentives right.
That's a good point.
Problem, though, with their approach is they didn't use any of that money to shore up Medicare. It's not like they kept it in Medicare to fix its financing problem because, of course, they spent all the money that they saved through price controls on prescription drugs on wind and solar giveaways and electric vehicles and, supersized Obamacare subsidies and all the other spending that was in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And by the way, they claimed there was deficit reduction and less than a year later, now the official estimates show there's no deficit reduction. The bill actually increases the deficit because they spend every dollar that they take out of Medicare and that they got in, the business tax hikes that were in that bill. And then some. The cost of the green energy giveaways has already more than doubled in a year. And so, you could say, maybe you could say, prescription drugs are a place Medicare could save money and spend less. I'm a little bit concerned, about how you can do that without, undermining the availability of new cures and treatments and so forth. But I think everyone would agree that if Medicare can spend less on drugs, the money ought to have been kept in Medicare.
Absolutely.
I don't think most people.
All that other spending.
Yeah, they're using logic. They would think that was kind of a no-brainer, but.
Yeah, I just don't think most people know that the money didn't go back to Medicare.
Mm-mm.
Right.
No.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because the Republicans who oppose this bill, they never talk. They don't want to talk about Medicare because they, somebody told them all Medicare is a Democrat, so they don't.
But the big thing with that is, and we see it over and over. I think the most recent guy was somebody in Florida, and if you even utter the words Social Security or Medicare, especially at the Fed, if you're in the House or the Senate, if you mention those words, like we're gonna take a hard look at that, then all of a sudden you're trying to get rid of it. They
right.
immediately
jump on this.
Yeah. They're trying to get rid of Medicare.
Yeah, have you noticed that if a Republican says, like, you know, if a Republican says, for instance, you know, we ought to have a Greenspan-style commission like we had in the 80s to shore up Social Security's finances, which is basically, by the way, what DeSantis voted for in the budget that Trump is attacking him for voting for, is basically, you know, included in those alternative budgets was like a commission, like the Greenspan-style commission to shore up Social Security. But what does that turn into on the campaign trail? He voted to raise the retirement age. He wants to destroy Social Security. And so you're right. What happens is if anybody talks about anything related to the entitlement problem, they just get blown up politically. They get torched politically. But there's an asterisk on that. That's if they're a Republican. If they're a Democrat, they talk about it, they can actually do it. They can actually raise billions of dollars out for other spending, and it's fine.
That's the thing that's really, really deceitful.
Like, fake fact checkers tell them that it isn't happening, even though it is, and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's really deceitful, and because every single election cycle, I mean, honestly, it's like clockwork. Every election cycle, the Republicans want to take away Medicare and Social Security, and then they'll take some itty-bitty soundbite where some guy says, you know, we should really take a look at the Social Security age thing, and it's like, that's it. They're taking it away. They're trying to get rid of seniors, and it's like, oh my God, you can't even talk about it.
I think
they'd all have to do it on the same day. Maybe they couldn't get after them all.
Well, and to me, this is a subject. It shouldn't be one party or the other party. This is affecting all of us in the United States. Well, us older people.
So that's everybody,
well,
isn't it?
I think every younger person hopes to be an older person.
That's true, too.
Well, but I actually believe the younger generation has it in their mind. It's not going to exist when they're older anyway, so why bother?
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges with these entitlement programs. You know, if you do nothing, then you get a massive benefit cut. You either get a massive benefit cut, or they just print the money to pay the benefits, and you get chronic inflation. You know, you get one or the other. I mean, the longer you wait to address it, the harder the solutions are, and the only solutions kind of become non-solutions, right? They either say, you know, now we're going to turn these into welfare programs, and anybody who isn't dirt poor doesn't get them, right? Or they say, we're going to cut the benefits for everyone across the board, or they say, we're going to keep the promises, but we're going to have to print all the money, and the price of everything goes up.
They all kind of go someplace bad.
Bad answers.
Yeah. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I know that I can feel people seizing because we used the word entitlement, but that does make sense, even though people paid into it. And I guess we should clear that up maybe when we return. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. You're listening to We the People, and I found a theme song for Medicare. I thought they should have their own theme song. So you heard it here first at WePeopleRadio.us.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Did you know that the marketing of marijuana is a misogynistic and racist activity? That's right. Most marijuana corporations are owned and controlled by rich, fat cat white corporate types, and most dispensaries are placed into depressed communities of color. These communities can least afford the chains of drug addiction and corporate greed. For more information about marijuana, please visit sources like ALM, Americans Against Legalizing Marijuana, at www.aalm.info. And remember, let's be careful out there.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the diamond. Sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank a boat up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up. He said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve this bellyache. I said, doctor, Ain't there nothing I can take a sip?
Doctor.
And that's where we'll be in 20 years. That will be real. So Phil, when people call them entitlements and the bulk of the population freaks out because they paid into it, they don't feel it should be called an entitlement. What do you say to that?
Yeah, we actually we asked a question about that in our survey, and we said which comes closest to your views. We said, is Medicare a benefit that you and your family receive from the government, or is it something you and your family earned from working and paying into it? And it was 15 to 85 that it was the second.
So yeah.
People don't like the idea that it's a government program, and of course, you know, it is a government program. But if you've been paying it tax on every paycheck you've ever made in your entire life into something, then you feel like it's something that you earned because you did. Of course, you and I know that the way the financing works, the money you paid in was spent, you know, right when it came in,
right,
from many decades ago, and it's somebody else that's paying for you now because they never invested the money in anything. Congress spent it all. And by the way, you know, this is a really upsetting thing, particularly about Social Security. We had very large surpluses for a long time, and we had multiple presidents that wanted to actually invest them. And Bill Clinton actually got this right. He wanted to invest the surpluses. He couldn't get Congress to go along. And then, of course, Bush wanted to invest them via personal accounts, and he got torched politically. It basically blew up his second term. And, of course, now there are no surpluses. Now it's in deficit. Too late to use the surpluses to, you know, build up, market returns and use that to cover the cost of benefits. And so if we had done reforms early enough, we would have had a really positive solution instead of just the negative ones of benefit cuts and, you know, reducing eligibility, raising retirement age, that kind of thing. If we had actually harnessed the power of real investments, we could have paid higher benefits, you know, through those higher returns.
Mm-hmm.
But the politics of that just didn't quite ever work. And when it comes to Medicare, of course, we've got a bigger problem, which is the amount of money that comes in is much smaller than the amount of money that comes in for Social Security, because the Medicare payroll tax is much smaller than the Social Security payroll tax. And, you know, mm-hmm. historically, that's because Medicare was a much smaller program. But now, healthcare costs have increased so much, and people are living so much longer lives that the Medicare unfunded liability is now much bigger than the Social Security unfunded liability. It's something like $50 trillion of net present value. And, you know, there are no great solutions for that. That said, if you really think you can save hundreds of billions on prescription drugs, it's criminal to take it out of Medicare when you have such a huge funding gap in Medicare. And that's, I think, where the Democrats are really vulnerable in what they did last year, which is an easier thing to explain than getting into, you know, why price controls maybe aren't the best idea for prescription drugs.
Yeah, that's true, because that does, I don't know, you know, we've talked about it many times on the show with a variety of topics, but it's the same as with kids and dogs, you know, when you're explaining, you're losing, and this requires, unfortunately, kind of some explaining.
Although I will say that with basically zero help from the media, you know, we asked in this poll, do you think there'll be fewer drugs and treatments available as a result of the price controls that were put in? And 80% of seniors said yes. We said, do you think you're going to pay less on your own prescription drug prices? And only 14% of said yes. And so even just on the headline level of whether government should be setting prices, most people think are pretty, you know, suspicious of that it's actually going to cause more harm than good.
Yeah, and that ought to be pretty telling. The one thing we should add, like with Social Security, that is really, I don't know, it's crazy. It's like a rumor that started a really long time ago that never goes away. But I have so many people I hear from that will say, well, if we weren't giving Social Security to illegal aliens, then, you know, that program would be fine. And so just to put a, like, put a pin in that balloon. SSI, Social Security Insurance, the low income program, does not come out of your Social Security, fund. Not that there is really exactly a fund, but anyway, it doesn't come out of what people have put in from work. It is paid through the Social Security Administration. It's administered there, but it isn't the equivalent, because I've got people who don't have enough quarters, and I can't get Social Security, but illegal aliens can. It's like, no, those are different. I don't know.
Well, and I look, you know, back in the day when I was a teenager and first started working and we briefly learned about Social Security and stuff, and I looked at it going, well, whatever I'm paying in is paying for my grandparents. You know, that's how I looked at it.
Well, my daughter went to work.
But now...
Most people don't quite get that. But
yeah,
that's
but exactly now... I feel like it's our children who are paying for us. It's not even a multi-generational anymore because it is at a deficit.
I just liked it when my stepdaughter got her first she got her first paycheck and she called and she wanted to know who FICA was and how they got all her money. Like, well, welcome to the world. It was FICA.
So Phil, I got a question. What do you think it's going to take for AARP to kind of reverse their trend and actually advocate for seniors instead of
themselves?
Yeah, I mean, with the billions they're making, do people just not realize that AARP is enriching themselves at the cost of seniors?
Well, I don't know how many of them know it, and of course that's one of the major things that we're focused on trying to expose. And you know, we got some incredible numbers in this poll related to the relationship that AARP has with UnitedHealthcare. And for any of your listeners who are not aware of this, the majority of AARP's revenue now comes from corporate royalties, and they make about triple what they bring in membership dues just from their biggest corporate royalty deal, which is with UnitedHealthcare. They make about $800 million to $1 billion a year from their deal with UnitedHealthcare. And the way it works is anyone who buys an AARP-branded plan from UnitedHealthcare, whether it's a Part D plan or whether it's a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medigap supplemental plan, every month when you pay your premium, they take 5% off the top and they send it to AARP. That is, they call it a royalty for licensing their name. And these are pretty smart people with pretty smart lawyers, and so by calling it a royalty instead of a commission, they don't have to follow any of the state insurance laws or any of that because United is selling it, not AARP, and they're licensing the name essentially. But 5% of the premiums every month forever when you are in an AARP branded plan are going to AARP. They're getting skimmed off the top, and that's become kind of the principal business that they're in, and it's a big business. You know, if they're getting $1 billion a year with the 5%, that means United's selling $20 billion a year in premiums in those plans.
Right.
So we're talking big, big business. And of course, $1 billion a year to an advocacy group. It's not like it's not like a for-profit business. In the for-profit business world, $1 billion is big. It makes you an important company, but it's not earth-shaking. In the advocacy world that AARP plays in, it makes them, 10 times the size of any other group. And, they've got an enormous political throw weight as a consequence of the massive amount of money they have. And so, one of the reasons that the coverage of Inflation Reduction Act was so distorted and one-sided in Democrats' benefit is AARP spent hundreds of millions of dollars on advertising and phone calls and events and all of this stuff supporting that bill and supporting the Democrats who voted for it. And, in fact, we did an analysis. There are about 100 members of Congress, House, and Senate that AARP supported last year with events and advertising and so forth. And only one of them was a Republican. And by the way, it was a Republican who was going to win anyway. It was Mike Crapo from Idaho who had, token opposition, but was going to win anyway. And so they've got a sea of money coming in because of the way they're set up with all of this corporate royalty money. And they use it to promote, the agenda and the policy that's beneficial to the insurance industry, but also to Democrats. So it's sort of a fusion of the Democrats, the insurance industry, and an advocacy group that still has a brand that makes people think of seniors, even though they've really been representing more their own interests in this corporate relationship for a long time than what seniors are actually interested in. And the poll numbers we got on this, they were incredible. 85% of older voters told us they were concerned about the relationship they have with UnitedHealthcare. 80% said that it creates a conflict of interest, for the obvious reason that they make more money when premiums are higher. And so, they act like, premiums aren't a problem. You know, they act like the only thing anyone cares about is drug prices, premiums are not a problem, when actually more people are concerned about paying their premiums than they are about paying
exactly.
their drug counter. Premiums are the much bigger problem.
Yeah, I hear about that all the time.
They make more money for premiums. They make more money if you have high premiums. And they're supposedly your advocacy group. Think about that. 88% of the older voters in our survey said that AARP should not have supported the IRA after we told them it diverted Medicare drug savings for unrelated spending. And the number that I found the most shocking, because I'm not sure I've ever seen, I don't think the sky is blue with poll this high, 95% of older voters said there should be a clear public disclosure of the financial relationship AARP has with UnitedHealth in their advertising and lobbying. And
that's pretty good.
Have 95% of anyone ever agreed on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a high
level. So as a senior signing up for Medicare, and you're aware of this relationship with UnitedHealthcare, what are your options?
Well, I think you got to think long and hard before you choose an AARP branded plan. I think you should definitely search around. There are many, many companies that offer these various Medicare plans. There are many United plans that don't carry the AARP branding. If you do want United, and if you do choose, these are popular plans for a reason. I understand that people like them, but if you do choose them, understand that they're taking a 5% skim every month, and it's probably going to left-wing politics.
Right.
So I think people need to be informed consumers. The other thing is, you know, go on the actual Medicare site and do your searching on there, because if you just type it into Google, you might end up on the AARP site where you're only going to see their branded plans because they have that exclusive deal with United. So I think people need to, you know, do their homework before they choose a plan.
Is it, the whole Medicare thing is just super complicated. If somebody's trying to figure out, you know, how the plans work and what they ought to do, I mean, as you guys got into this farther and farther, where would you send somebody to get good information to make good choices about how to access their Medicare options?
Well, I think the
or a couple.
The
official site
is probably where you want to start, on Medicare.gov, where you can look through the plans, and it's going to be, you know, relatively apples to apples. The other thing you need to do is you got to call the providers that you want to use and see what plans they're in, especially if you're looking at Medicare Advantage plans. You got to know what the participation is going to be. Make sure that the doctors you use, make sure the facilities you use participate in a given plan before you select it. And
that's a good point.
You know, that's I think the most important thing is doing that homework and, you know, making sure that it's a plan that works for the providers you want to use. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't think there's like some great magic place you can go that's going to give you, spit out the answer for you.
You're going to have to work at it
a lot of people think the place to go is AARP, and of course they just get the plan that makes AARP the most money, not necessarily the one that's best for them.
Yeah, which is really, really too bad, because they're a big, big name, and you know, people know it, and I think they kind of rely on that.
I went to an insurance broker and had her chart it all out, all the different plans, costs, all of that, because I hate insurance. It's too confusing. But that's how I enrolled.
Well, and just so people know that if you don't sign up for Medicare when you're eligible at 65, if you choose to do that later, I don't care if you have your own insurance through work, if you're still working. If you don't sign up at 65 for at least the basic,
hospitalization.
Yeah, you're hosed. Going forward, you pay a really big fee going forward. So you can't just close your eyes and wish it away. What else did you guys find out, Phil?
Let me see. What did we now run through? Well, 92% of older voters thought that AARP should be talking as much about out-of-pocket insurance costs, like copays and deductibles, instead of only talking about drug prices, and that they should be talking about premiums, and that they should be talking about insurance access, insurance access to independent pharmacies. Of course, you know, when we talk about how they have this relationship with UnitedHealth, it's important to point out that includes UnitedHealth PBM subdivision, OptumRx, which...
What does that mean? PBM?
Their pharmacy benefit manager.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever had to deal with PBMs, but the PBMs essentially are contracted out by all of the healthcare plans to manage their drug benefits, and that can mean excluding certain drugs. It can mean requiring you to go to specific pharmacies. It can mean, you know, various practices to kind of try to reduce the cost of drugs. And you know, they've been criticized for a lot of things, including, you know, excluding drugs on the basis of what makes money for them rather than what actually is medically justified, and also, in some cases, forcing people to go to, you know, big box pharmacies instead of their local independent one. And so, you know, these have been huge issues, but AARP is completely missing an action on them. They literally never talk about them, even though, you know, our poll shows seniors want them to talk about these issues. But, of course, if they make all their money from United, and United owns one of the largest pharmacy benefit managers, Optum, then, you know, you can understand why they want to avoid
that.
Yeah,
that's going to be the best one for you. Yeah.
Well, that explains a lot of the mail, because I'm 62 this year, so apparently they have me on some hot sheet.
Yeah,
getting inundated with AARP stuff.
Oh, they're big. They market like
yep.
maniacs.
Yeah, I'd like the money back that they just market to me. I mean,
yeah, right.
Crap, that can't be free.
I mean, how about if instead of skimming 5% off the top of all their plans, they could just charge 5% less, right? Wanted it to be to benefit their members.
Yeah, because it's not like people haven't heard of AARP.
Yeah, I mean, it's just great.
They're trying to wear me down, I guess, before I make a choice, huh?
74% of the voters in our survey believe that the 5% skim is a junk fee, which I thought was an interesting one, since Biden gives every speech about how much he hates junk fees, but he never mentions that one, of course, because it benefits Democrats. I mean, I think we've run through most of it. Do you guys have the slide deck in front of you?
I'm looking at the survey. I mean, we could look at. I was looking at your full survey, and I was. How did you decide who was going to be in this survey? Would you guys just?
Well, we used a major pollster, which is kind of expensive, but we wanted it to be especially credible with Republican candidates, because we were hoping that we'd get numbers that would show them winning messages that we could sort of convince them to use to kind of move this debate in the next cycle. And so we used McLaughlin and Associates, which is Trump's pollster. And what we asked them to do is we asked them to design a sample that would be large enough to give us not just statistically valid numbers for older voters overall, but also statistically valid numbers for AARP members specifically. And so they ended up surveying about 1,600 people, and about 700 of them were AARP members. And so we got a pretty narrow margin of error on all these numbers we've been talking about. I think it's about 2.5% margin of error for the overall older voter sample, and it was 3.7%. For AARP members. And so we were able to produce numbers that I think are pretty meaningful. And of course, you know, everyone gets on pollsters about how wrong they are and how many elections they've missed and how polls are bad and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, but when you're talking about 90 or 95% of people agreeing on something, it could be off by 10 or 20, but it still tells you.
That's a lot out of 1,600 people. I mean, really, and I was looking at just the beginning part with the voters. You had 50 were Republican, 41 Democratic candidates of you know, how they would best describe who they'd vote for. So you had a pretty good split there too. It wasn't even, you know, heavily weighted one way or the other. That was kind of that's kind of helpful, because then you're getting people who listen to wildly different news sources as well. We have to take a really quick break, one last break, and then we'll be back with our guest, Phil Kirpin. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Make a supersonic man out of you. Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies, whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows.
Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too.
Pretty sure if we ever figure the Medicare thing out, that does make us crazy.
Yeah, I think
or it'll make us crazy while we're trying to figure it out. Oh my gosh. So, Phil, just out of curiosity, how much did you know about Medicare before you started working on this?
Well, I know a fair amount about the finances from sort of the government perspective because I've been working on these issues for a long time. Some of the questions you're asking, not as much. I'm a little daring to deal with these firsthand. But, you know, it's definitely complicated. And
it is. It's just a minefield. I mean, you start looking at this and, you know, you have a lot of people who just, I mean, that's why they punch the AARP ticket. Just because it's already done.
Yeah.
They've heard of them before.
They must be good.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't actually see it, but did you have a question about that? Like, if you were an AARP person, why'd you do it or not do it?
I don't think we had something exactly.
I was just curious. You know, what made them go that route or not? Like,
you know, it's probably marketing more than anything. You see a million ads for something, you can take a look at it. And, you know, look, I mean, they've got, you know, in some markets they may have the best network, they may have the best, you know, they may have the best benefit package, that kind of thing. So, you know, just...
Oh, yeah, here it was.
They've got enough scale that, you know, even with the 5% scam, they can be pretty competitive.
Oh, yeah, because, well, here was one. Question 26. Do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of AARP? And favorable was 60.4. Unfavorable was 21.5. So, and never heard of was 0.7. So that tells you something. How did somebody never hear about it?
Phil, do you know, I don't know if this is really related, but on the money that they saved on the prescription plans that went to EVs and you know, the
solar,
green energy and all this, do you know who specifically benefited?
Most of the money hasn't been allocated yet, so it's going to be, you know, there, but it's going to be all kinds of companies getting all kinds of grants and so forth. And a lot of it is, a lot of the spending is through the tax code. So they created, you know, these various refundable tax credits, which is one of the reasons that the price tag keeps rising, because there are going to be more companies claiming them than they originally estimated. Mm. And so it's basically, you know, they created a bunch of qualifying activities, and, you know, it's wind, solar, and EVs, and hydrogen, and various. And so, you know, companies are now in sort of a gold rush to get those tax dollars, essentially. And
right.
So it's, you know, it's very basically all of the companies that are pursuing those things. And then, of course, there's also a bunch of loan guarantee programs, and I think there's $300 billion of loan guarantees that the Energy Department will issue. And so there could be thousands of new Solyndras that are essentially financed with this money. You know, out of this so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And that doesn't even count in the cost, because the official scorekeepers assume that all the loans and loan guarantees will be paid back. And, of course,
well, that works all the time.
Not be, so it's going to be even more expensive,
yeah,
probably.
It was interesting. I've been looking here on one of your questions, on one of the questions for this 35. Are you aware or unaware that AARP endorsed and supported the spending plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, that cost $740 billion to make significant changes to Medicare? And you had 80% were unaware of that. And I think that's pretty reflective of the public at large. Actually, it might be low.
That's definitely something I think a candidate should run on, you know?
Well, yeah, and we actually repaired that, because the next question after that, we said, you know, if you said, we said, are you aware or unaware that AARP supported the bill? And most were unaware. And then we said, do you think they should have supported the bill, considering that the funds that were taken out of prescription drug spending were used for unrelated spending and tax breaks?
Yeah.
And we said, you know, based on knowing that, should they have supported or opposed it? And 88% said they should have opposed it.
Right.
And it was the same number for overall and for AARP members specifically. So 88% of AARP's own members said they should have said the bill has to keep any Medicare savings inside of Medicare. And they obviously didn't do that.
Right.
So I do think that's a big vulnerability for them. And there's also a big business opportunity, right? There are a lot of conservative groups that are trying to call themselves the conservative anti-AARP. There's the AMAC, Association of Mature American Citizens. There's 60-plus Association. There are probably a couple others. You know, this is their chance, right? This is their chance. You know, I don't think they can spend as much on marketing as AARP does, but they certainly should be able to reach some potential customers and point out what AARP is doing and make some inroads with this, I hope.
Yeah, because the AMAC guys were big during the whole big Obamacare fight.
Yeah, I think came on the scene.
I heard about them a lot. I don't know how long they've been around, but you don't hear about them much now
at all.
But...
Well, I always see their ads on the Mark Levin show, so maybe we listen to different shows. But
because every time the commercials come on, I change the channel to something else.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you click more quickly. Yeah. Look, I mean, I think that Congress really needs to take a look at this, in particular, this idea of strengthening disclosure.
Yeah.
Anything 95% of people agree on is probably a good idea, and I really think that they should have to say, you know, they should have to tell people, look. We skim 5% off the top of your premium every month under this plan, and we have a huge interest in premiums being high because that's how we make our money. If they get away with people not knowing that, then they're going to get away with misrepresenting who they are and what they and what they stand for, and
right.
They're going to keep disrupting these policy debates in a way that results in pretty bad outcomes from my standpoint. And so we've got to shine a spotlight on that. And of course. Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this issue is it would be great if Congress could actually strengthen disclosure rules, but we don't necessarily need that. All we need is people to know what's happening. And so I appreciate you giving me the chance to explain it to your audience, because everyone who's been listening to us for the past hour, they know this now, whether there's
Congress
disclosure or not. And so I think we can accomplish, if Congress won't do it, you know, we can kind of do it ourselves, which is what I'm trying to do with the things we've been writing.
Yeah, to kind of spread the word, because the fact that, because it's interesting, one of your questions that they talked about, AARP has been vocal on prescription drug pricing issues, and they said, 93% of people said they should be vocal on things like out-of-pocket expenses. All that kind of stuff was all in the 90% range. To advocate. I mean, people think that they should be advocating. So if that's not happening and it's basically a big self-enrichment, you don't hear anything about this. And it's interesting because you would think there would be some hay to be made with this, but it's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did we hear about when they were doing this horrible bill last year? You know, we heard about the... We heard about the tax hikes, and we heard about the spending, but we didn't really hear about, the Democrats bragged about how they were going to reduce Medicare drug spending and how great that was, but I didn't hear any Republicans talk about the problem with that, and that it was actually going to create harms, and it was wrong to take that money out of Medicare. And so it was really a missed opportunity, and, we're hoping to... We're hoping these opportunities won't be missed, and that this next cycle will focus a little more on the vulnerability of, you know, the insurance industry, AARP and Democrats working together, and use that as something that Republicans can maybe score some points on. And that's what really changes politicians' behaviors. When something hurts them politically, they stop doing it. Until then, they keep doing it.
Right. And bringing up Medicare and Social Security has become just kind of a third rail deal that just always goes wrong on you, even with the best of intentions. But interestingly enough, question 48, as I'm scrolling here, I remembered this one. The federal government loses billions of dollars in improper payments, you know, on and on with that, and fraud and abuse. And would you support a dedicated congressional investigation? 95%. That was another 95%er. I mean, if you just went through this survey and did the things that were 95%, you could get a lot done.
Yeah, the waste, fraud, and abuse is outrageous in almost every government spending program, but certainly in the healthcare programs, it's off the charts. And UnitedHealth is a pretty bad offender in this regard. I mean, they've been caught repeatedly overbilling the government and various fraudulent practices and so forth. And AARP is never going to say a peep about that, right? Because that's their cash cow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, definitely an area where, I know people sort of roll their eyes when you say waste, fraud, and abuse, because they just assume it's going to go on forever and you're never going to cut much of it. But, if you could actually make some progress on that, that could improve the financial outlook considerably.
Well, I think too, a lot of people are looking at it like, gosh, the last thing we need is more government intervention in any program, because it never seems to go right. So it's a little tough to sell that.
Well, except that they just kind of gave them a free pass, so now at this point we might want to go take a look at that. Is there an end point from the Inflation Reduction Act with the Medicare thing? Is this a change that was made that just goes on forever, or is there a time frame on it?
Well, the supposed reduction in cost, the supposed reduction in what seniors pay is supposed to take effect in a couple of years, but I will see if it ever actually happens. The big thing from a price control sort of disruption and innovation standpoint is that they're going to name, basically 10 drugs where the Secretary of HHS is going to set the price instead of it being a market mechanism. And the consequence of that, that hasn't happened yet. That happens in 2025. But we're already seeing basically every drug company canceling some of their clinical trials, especially for sort of more speculative cancer drugs, because the economics now are very different. It used to be, you try to develop all of these drugs, and a lot of them don't amount to anything, but you get one that works and it pays for all the other ones, because you get to charge thousands of dollars for it, you make billions of dollars, and it sort of drives the whole cycle of investment, and it's the gusher that covers all the dry holes, if you will. Well, now you've basically told these companies, if your gusher is too big, it's going to be capped by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, right? You're not going to be able to get your billions, because you don't want to be in the top 10 of drugs, or else the government's going to set the price and you're not going to make your money back.
Right.
And so now the calculation for these companies is very different. It's kind of like, how do we develop drugs that'll be like a solid base hit, but not necessarily a home run, because we don't want to be on that top 10 list. And so the incentives are really different. And as a consequence of that, I think 7 or 8 major clinical trials have already been canceled. And I think they were all cancer drugs. And so we're definitely already seeing fewer new drugs being developed as a consequence of government, interfering in the drug pricing system.
Yeah, see, that's the part that
people don't... I don't think that gets calculated when people
they
look
don't
at,
understand.
Yeah, when people look at drug pricing and, you hear, that they can get medications cheaper out of Canada and different places like that. But those are blocked. And so it just becomes really convoluted, I guess,
The international thing is a big problem, and Trump tried to address this, but almost every other rich country gets a free ride on us, because they pay a fraction of what we pay, and their logic is hey, if Americans are covering the development costs, we don't have to.
Right.
And what they basically tell the drug companies is, you know, we're going to pay a much lower price than what the American price is, what a market price would be. And sometimes the manufacturers will say, then you don't get the drug. And, you know, it is true that in most of these countries, they don't get new drugs as quickly as we do, but they get them, you know, a few years later, typically, and they don't pay for the development costs. We do. And so they essentially get a free ride on us. And Trump really tried to address this through a variety of means, but most significantly through trade negotiations, basically saying that other countries had to pay more of a market price for drugs, so they would pay more and we would pay less. And he actually, you know, everyone kind of said, oh, you're never going to get another country to agree to pay more for drugs, but Trump did. He got Canada and Mexico to agree to pay more for biotech drugs when he renegotiated NAFTA and the USMCA. And believe it or not, that was one of the three things that Nancy Pelosi absolutely demanded had to be removed. And so Trump got them to agree to pay more for drugs, and Nancy Pelosi made them take it out.
Wow. Phil, we appreciate all the great information you've given us. I'm assuming we will chat with you soon again. Our guest has been Phil Kirpin, and we love having him on because he always brings all this great info. You can find this interview commercial-free at wethepeopleradio.us.
For good.